KPCW News Time now, 8:11. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, coming up on Monday, Park City Municipal hosting the first of a three-act community workshop on growth. In the studio with details, Park City Mayor Jack Thomas, along with City Council Member Tim Henney. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hi, Leslie.
So, Tim, this was something I think you brought up a while ago, saying that you wanted the city to take on. To do what exactly?
Well, I think at the root of it all is I've been on council for a year and a half, and it has become apparent to me that every time we have a community discussion on various topics, whether it be transportation and congestion or form-based code in Bonanza Park, we run up against the same elephant in the room, and that's growth. So we need to have a conversation about the dynamic of growth in the city and in the surrounding region to create a baseline of understanding before we can start to tackle these other subjects.
Okay. So, Jack, why don't you give us the details of this, what's next? Like I mentioned, it starts Monday, but it kind of continues for a couple weeks after that?
It does. And, you know, growth is a complex issue, and understanding growth is like understanding traffic and transportation. I mean, there's no common single ingredient to growth. It's a complex issue. And understanding our appetite for growth is also very important, because I think we understand that other parts of outside of our community have different appetite than we do. In other words, you know, there's a tremendous pro-growth mentality in the Wasatch Front, and I think it's been their status quo for quite some time.
Well, and we let's talk about whose appetite for growth, because when you start spending millions of dollars doing these public plazas like this, you're attracting growth. You're attracting people to come here.
Indeed. You create more of a central place for Park City. And I think those are important discussions. But I think what we're interested in is seeing a broader cross-section of people, a broader cross-section of ages, and an economy in this community. You know, we seem to be growing like a vector. There's, a lot of second homes. There's not new population to our community. There's just more outside traffic and outside influences coming in.
Yeah, and Leslie, I think you hit on a really central point there. Part of this, what I think is the misunderstanding about the dynamic of growth, is what causes growth and what creates growth, what encourages growth and what actually creates that growth. And within the city and the surrounding region, there is so much entitled development growth on the books right now that people, I believe, do not completely understand. Now, what we've done for the last 20 years is promote this as the place that welcomes the world. We put in these plazas. We have the Olympics. We do all these things. And at the bottom line for that is this is a place people want to live, work, play, and visit. So we have created that growth along with the state law, which is very pro-property rights. So that growth is entitled, and it's on the books, and it's coming. It's on our doorstep. So now it becomes, what do we do with it? And can we slow it down? Do we do things that encourage it? And of course, it's a vicious cycle, because every time we make this place more attractive for us and then we improve our quality of experience, that draws more people here. So how do we want to break that cycle? I don't think we want to break that cycle, but we do have the ability to guide the growth and to influence the growth. And that's what these initiatives like Form-Based Code in Bonanza Park and Mountain Accord are attempting to do. What gets lost in that conversation is why we're doing it. We're doing it because there is tremendous growth coming our way that is out of our control because it's entitled. I do not believe that there's a firm understanding of that within the community.
And certainly, Park City has got its perimeters, but of course the growth is outside of our boundaries, because that's where,
that's true. I mean, what we can most easily affect is what is within our boundaries, right? And we have no legal means to deal with growth outside, other than discussions with our partners in the county.
Sure. But back to your point, Tim, because, yep. I mean, this is something I had thought about earlier, too, and that is that we spent a lot of time and a lot of money before 2002 to welcome the world. So
yes.
What are we saying?
We still do.
What are we saying now that, no, you're not welcome because we want to keep Park City?
Well,
I mean, we've got really,
That's why we need to engage the community, and we need to reach a mutual understanding, a baseline understanding, and a deeper understanding on this dynamic of growth. And I think we have a mismatch right there right now. Within the city, within the staff, people deal with the growth issue because it transcends into every single concept and every discussion that we have. So that's kind of a given and an assumption that we're doing these things because of this growth and we're trying to manage it and guide it. But within the community, the perception is, why are you doing that? It's going to encourage growth. That's not the intent. The intent is to guide the growth, mitigate the impacts, and possibly even leverage the benefits. But it gets perceived that we are encouraging and causing growth.
And I think our interest is to find balance and draw the community out and engage them in this discussion, because we really want to hear from them. And we want to hear what their appetite is for growth. And, of course, there are things that we can do that accelerate growth. And facilitate
growth. You're doing something right outside our door here. And we built in our
well. There's some expansion and some contraction within the central historic area of Park City. I mean, we've lost a lot of things, and we make up for a little here and there. We've lost some pocket parks, and we create more of a gathering place. And we're studying the impact of special events in this community. We have a new committee for exploring those things, and because we realize that there are some diminishing returns to those activities. And I think as we go forward, I think we're going to have to discuss what do we do, what's our approach from a city council perspective with regard to those things that we can control. Do we expand our infrastructure for 30, 40 years out? Because that will obviously expand our ability to grow. You know, if we create wider highways and more parking within the community, we're going to expand the possibilities. So there's that delicate balance of having a resort town, you know, empowering the resorts to the extent that we can, finding some off-season economic activities to keep us in balance and make it work without impacting the values of the community.
So let's talk first. I mean, we've got coming up Monday night. This is going to be at the Jim Sani Auditorium, 5:45. You're going to actually start presentations at 6:15. So just an opportunity to mingle. You'll have some snacks, I'm guessing. So both of you are giving presentations. I mean, prepared presentations, like, you know, the slideshow and all of that, or just...
There's going to be some slideshow. Yeah, there will be some slides that go along with each of our discussions. And yeah, we have, kind of a framework, but it's not really choreographed or scripted out. I have a sense of what I want to convey, and I'm sure Jack has. Well, I know we both have a sense of what we're going to convey to the community. But basically, what we're trying to convey is this is really important. This is probably, in my opinion, I've lived here 23 years, and the visioning, this is right alongside the visioning that we have done. And it's critical. This is going to can set and influence and help the trajectory of this community for the next 20 to 40 years, in my opinion, right now. That's where we are. We are at a critical juncture in our community's future.
Yeah, we have some community visioning studies, though, done from back in the 80s.
And Leslie,
and in
I'm
fact,
glad you
I mean,
brought
if,
that up.
If you were to look at that study now, I could actually pull it out of my file cabinet. Yep. I haven't done that in a while. But have we created the vision that we determined that we wanted back in the 80s?
We have, and that's part of the problem. We are now dealing with the successes of creating the vision that we had back in the 80s and the early 90s. The goals that came from the community vision have been implemented, and this is the result. I don't know that anybody could have envisioned that we would have been so successful, drawn so many people, had the boom that we've had, but this whole region is benefiting from that visioning. And this is what we're now dealing with. So we can't go and say, all right, you know, here we are 20 years later and we don't like what's happening. Let's, you know, completely alter course. But we can say this is what we're dealing with and let's influence the future and let's use the tools that we have at our disposal that are available to us and inform the process in the ways that we can. But we have to understand what we can and can't do. As I said, entitled growth and development is 4,000 roughly units within Park City additional. That's at the base of both of the resorts and Treasure Mountain and redevelopment in Bonanza Park for the most part. There's some infill around town. But you can argue that eventually you're going to build out your entire community. We have a long way to go. 4,000 additional units. There's 8,000 primary residents here. How is that going to impact the primary resident population? In our surrounding areas, Summit County came to us and gave a presentation and said the reason they're doing this entitled, you know, no more entitled development till we build out what's already on the books is because there's 14,000 units on the books right now in Snyderville Basin. This is not Summit County. This is Snyderville Basin. Wasatch County, it's something like 25,000. That's enormous. That is going to have a tremendous impact on us. That is going to happen. Now, whether it happens in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, or 40 years is where we can sort of work with it and either encourage it or slow it down.
Right.
Well, are we in the process now of acquiring the water rights to take care of these 4,000 units that we've got coming into the city?
Well, I think that's part of the discussion we want to get into. I mean, increasing your ability to serve the broader future is a discussion that we have to have.
Well, you have to because you've already approved the units.
Right.
You have to have the water. But then you can say we're not buying any more water rights.
I'd like to step back a little bit because I think historically, how we grown? You know, I think that we have grown in a way that maybe doesn't serve us that well. We consider ourselves a live, work, play community, but there are fewer of us living here. Okay, our population has gone down, not up, and we're losing that cross section of people. And I think those are the things that I think we need to focus on. We need to have Tim. If I say this one more time, you're going to slap me. A complete community. What I mean is,
I love it when you say that. Okay. That's one of my favorite terms. A complete and whole community.
Yeah. What I mean by that is one that's in balance, one that has people that can live and work here. Okay. We've lost that to a great extent. What have we done that has allowed that? And I think having this discussion on growth will give us that ability to check ourselves and look at things that we maybe didn't do so well.
Well, back in the 80s, KPCW also sponsored forums like, do we want to be another
right.
Aspen? Do we want to be another Sandy? And you know what? We said no, but guess what? We are. So
Leslie, we are and we're not. I mean, there's a significant difference, in my opinion, between Aspen and Park City. That's a great example. This is an authentic community. This is a whole and complete community right now. We risk. There is a threat to that. There is a risk to that. And people translate that risk and threat into additional growth and the pace of growth. That's what this discussion is about.
Well, you would still hear, too, from some of the younger folks who would love to own some property in Park City saying,
absolutely,
that's never going to happen. And that's exactly what we saw in Aspen.
Mm-hmm. It is going to happen. It is going to happen. I mean, that is one of the two critical priorities of council. Again, coming as direct feedback from this community, we just allocated $31 million to affordable housing over the next 5 years, which is in addition to the $9 million that was already in the budget. We have $40 million to work with over the next 5 years. That's the tip of the iceberg, in my opinion. There's other monies there that will be available. We are going to make affordable housing, middle-income housing, all the way down through workforce housing. It's going to continue to remain a critical priority for at least the next five-year budget cycle.
Which is wonderful for the people who are here, and then...
Well, that offers opportunity for people.
Then we've got another, you know, an enticement. It's like, wow, Park City builds affordable housing.
Well,
Let's move there.
There you go. There's the vicious cycle. Yeah. But we do want to make sure that we have that whole and complete community, and that's a critical part of it.
Jack?
It all relates to traffic and congestion and part of our experience here. You know, so historically, small towns had people that lived and worked there. And they functioned there. They didn't travel to the, you know, 5 or 6 miles to the junction for goods and services. They found them here. So when I say complete, I mean a broader cross-section of businesses, a broader cross-section of people. The children are not graduating from high school and moving away and never to be seen again. I mean, your
right,
children are
can't.
Gone. My children are gone.
You know, it's not by choice. It's because they can't.
Right. So, well, you know, and so there's this gigantic economic curve for increased property value and increased opportunity for second homes. So we can attack this from, our land management code perspective. We have rewritten the general plan, and I think that we need to start putting some meat in the land management code now to be consistent with that general plan. Yeah. So we have a lot of work to do here. But what we want to hear from the community is what is their appetite for growth, because there are some things that we can do.
And as Jack said, this is a super complex issue, and it transcends all these other areas. And my belief is that right now there's a void of understanding within the community that creates a great deal of concern and anxiety with regard to growth. And it's, we have to reach a mutual baseline of understanding and a deeper understanding as a community to begin that process. When we try to jump ahead without that understanding, we just get derailed. It doesn't go anywhere, and we're spinning our wheels, not only as a government, but as a community.
Okay, 2 points I want to make. First, so Monday's forum at the Jim Sanney Auditorium is basically kind of an introduction, a presentation.
Right.
There'll be a little bit of time for some public comment.
A fair amount of time.
I'll talk. Yeah. Tim will talk. And then Robert Grove from Envision Utah. We'll talk about the broader scope of Utah and what's happening there. And it's important to understand the big picture.
And then coming up the following week, June 23rd from 6 to 7:30 p.m. and then the following Saturday, the 27th from 9 to 10:30 a.m., that's going to be the public's opportunity. Really, you're just going to put the recorders on and start.
Well, Jack's going to ask three questions of the community at the Jim Santee event on the 15th, and then in theory, the community will take those three questions, and when we meet with them later in those two sessions, we will sort of focus on and distill down to those three questions. But there will be ample opportunity for public engagement and comment during the Jim Santee event as well.
Do you have those questions that you can tell us now, Jack,
well, we
so people can start
that,
thinking about it? No?
No, you have to show up to the meeting.
Okay.
And then, well, obviously, it's going to part of it's going to be with regard to our appetite for growth and our perspective historically. You know, what have we done to get here, and what do we do moving forward? And listen to people with regard to what, you know, what they said in the 80s, what they said in 2009 in the visioning process. And we would like to hear from them again with regard to their perspective and their attitude. Because theoretically, at least, we're a reflection of the community and we respond to them.
So what is it that we want to get out of this effort? I mean, are we going to have some kind of growth management plan that we follow? Or is this really just another opportunity to kind of appease the community and say, oh, we're listening to you and we know you're concerned about growth? I mean,
well,
what are we going to get out of it?
I think there's always, whenever you ask for public engagement, and as Jack just said, we're a reflection of what the community desires, this is checking in on that level, first of all. But second, in my opinion, this is an incredibly important time and meeting for the community to tell us what they want. I mean, they could say, we don't want any more growth. Stop it. Now, what can we do to accomplish that? That gets into some really...
Well, right. It gets
into some state issues
with regard to property rights. It gets into lawsuits, first of all.
But also, how do you make this place less desirable? Because the drivers, people want to come here. We could stop funding our school system and go from one of the top school systems to one of the worst school systems. We could stop treating our water, have untreated water instead of quality water. Lower quality water with a lot of heavy metals in it. That would stop people from coming here. If that's really what we want to do, and that's where hearing some of that, you know, we have to stop the growth. So we need to say, if there's enough of that out there, what do we do to accomplish it? Here's the list of things we can do. I don't think people are going to want to do that. Not after spending 40 years trying to create a place that we want to live in as primary residents.
Okay. Lots of opportunity then for people to get in on this discussion.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I hope this brings people out. It's a very important issue and something that is in the heart of, I think, everyone.
Okay. Well, our 10-minute conversation isn't going to solve it. So, again, show up on Monday night, Jim Sanney Auditorium. Gosh, probably the big first meeting there, starting at 5:45.
That's right.
Okay. Jack, Tim?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:30. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio with me now, Park City Manager Diane Fauster, along with Michelle Downer, Deputy Building Official, and Jonathan Weidenhammer, Economic Development Manager. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Let's see, a lengthy work session, Diane, with a lot of items that are being brought back to the council. First, the update on the Daily West Mine. Assistant Manager Matt Dias was supposed to give an update last week. It didn't happen. So where are we now? It looks like we're underway with some kind of restoration of that old mine, Derek.
Mm-hmm. Clark Martinez, who is related to Rich Martinez,
a minor, is working on this, and he's working with the Jordan-L Special Service District. We've issued, the city has issued a grading permit, and I will tell you, this is the most closely watched project in the city right now, even more so than the project behind you. So staff will be on site, and this is the working to get the headframe out of the collapsed mine. Again, this wasn't that the headframe itself fell over. It was that the mine collapsed, which caused the headframe to fall over. So the structure itself, as Sandra Morrison pointed out, was actually in decent shape and wasn't on a list of that anybody was worried about. We had the mine collapse, which was hugely unfortunate, and the city is very focused on this. And as so far, the city's the only one who's actually been willing to step up and say, hey, we're going to put money towards this.
So is the city paying for it? Taxpayers are paying for it, I guess.
Right now, this piece is being done by Jordan-L Special Service District. The long-term question will be, and it's a question that will go to city council, is do you want to be the one who pays for the restoration of the head frame? So right now what they're going to do is be taking that out of the collapsed mine and putting that on the ground, doing it quite carefully, and laying it on its side for now.
Any idea how much it would cost?
I don't think we have a formal estimate yet. I think that's one of the things that staff is working on.
Are we talking thousands, tens of thousands?
I think we're possibly in the hundreds of thousands.
Wow. And the applicant is JSSD or Park City?
The applicant is actually Clark Martinez, who is right now contracting with JSSD. Actually, Clark had been... If you'll remember, the city actually does have a mine hazard ordinance, and they were actually working. JSSD, the night before the collapse, had actually approved work that Clark Martinez was going to be doing on the collapsed mine, on the mine itself, which then collapsed due to rain the next day.
All right. At 2:45, we're going to be talking about Old Town curbside pickup here. Still a very poor history of curbside collection performance due to a variety of factors. So what are we going to try and do about it?
This is an interesting question, and actually Michelle's been working with Matt Abbott and also with Nate Rockwood from Budget on this. You know, we do have some problems with toters. Basically, the toters are the recycling and garbage bins being left out, and the city does have an ordinance, and one of the problems sometimes is when we have nightly rentals in areas is that they get left out and people don't know which one belongs to whom. And so one of the proposals is that we could put RFID, radio frequency identification, on all of the toters, and then we could scan them and be able to enforce them. That might be going rabbit hunting with an AK-47. It might be overkill. And so one of the things that staff has done in the past couple weeks is sat down and said, how much of a problem is this? And where staff landed was, number one, this hasn't gone through the budget process that we put everything else through. So staff is recommending that we put it through the budget process. And as you know, we have a 2-year budget process. So this coming year will be a big budget year. And then it can be evaluated against other projects. The second piece that staff is reporting is that it's really annoying, but it's not as big of a problem as I think people think.
All right. 3:00, and I guess this brings you into the discussion, Michelle, the McPolin Barn Preservation Update. Basically, we're talking about spending $800,000 to stabilize the barn. And what this makes it – oh, you're going to talk about it then, Jonathan.
Sure.
So we stabilize it, but it's still really unfit for public use?
No, the $800,000 look, or kind of the basic level of service, would make it eligible for some use. It wouldn't be occupiable for an event or for – like a wedding or, a full use. It wouldn't have bathrooms. It wouldn't have heat. It wouldn't have plumbing. But you could get people in there. You could do tours in the summertime, but you couldn't use it in the winter either. You know, it's a basic structural upgrade so that we can make one of our kind of most iconic buildings a little bit more accessible.
Okay. So I was going to say, yeah, without our coalition building, this is Park City's icon. So
right.
That's why we're doing this?
Right. So the $800,000 is kind of a placeholder. We've done some initial structural estimates, and we want to proceed into next steps of really putting together a plan.
And the idea is really not to allow more events, or are we talking about maybe doing more events there?
I think that's going to continue to be a bit of an ongoing policy discussion, but as I understand it, the current direction is we want to, at minimum, and immediately shore it up structurally so we don't lose any more integrity, don't lose any more fabric. And then make sure we can continue that conversation on in the future. But as I understand it, Diane, there's no immediate direction to make it more usable.
No, right now staff is recommending that we do not amend the conditional use permit that governs the use of that facility. And that's a question for council long term. Denise Carey, who is the staff member who oversees the barn, she's been doing some survey work with the community, and we'll be providing council that feedback in the next few months as well. And I will say, you know, this council, historic preservation is identified as one of their top three priorities. And it's a priority that they continue to put funding towards, as well as significant effort. And this is, as you said, this is our icon. Additionally, you know, all the land around that area is preserved and protected by the Summit Land Conservancy.
Okay. At 5:30, the Park City Fire Ban. So it looks like we got a ban.
We're not going to recommend a ban at this point. As you know, we've got a lot of we've had a lot of wonderful rain, which is fantastic. Staff is anticipating if we dry out later in the season, we're going to have a really scary potential for wildfire with all the grass that's been growing and the rain that we've had. What this is intended to do is simply provide education about what laws are already in place with regard to fireworks and fires, what's allowed and what's not allowed. And also to talk to council about who has authority to ban what. So, for example, some of the authority rests with the chief fire marshal, and then some of the authority rests with council.
All right. Also, on the consent agenda, we're talking about spending $243,000 to put storm drains there along Little Bessie. Prospector seems very void of storm drains. I mean, I've seen one in my neighborhood, and that's, you know, two blocks away. So is it something that we're just doing for Little Bessie or for the entire development?
You know, in general, we will be given that back in December 2014, the city is now being regulated as a MS4, which is we are going to be required to have a higher level of stormwater compliance with state law. So I think you'll be definitely seeing some more investment in stormwater in general. This particular project is addressing, we've had some flooding in that area, and it's been acute, and the residents there are well aware of it, and we appreciate their patience, and this project we want to get done this summer.
All right. Well, I was going to say the problem also is that the city has to come in and redo curb and gutter because there's so much standing water because it's not draining.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a fix in the future as well?
I believe you'll end up seeing more stormwater in general at the city. We have, I think it's something like 23 miles of stormwater pipe right now, a lot of which you don't see under the ground. And also, when you think about a community like ours that we have a lot of impacted soils, it's not necessarily a bad thing to pipe water underground when you're talking about runoff.
Okay. Let's see. What else have we got here? Another amendment between the Mountain Regional, Park City Water, Summit Water. What's this for?
Sorry, my iPad just froze. Can you give me a hint on what that
one is? A consideration of a second amendment to the agreement between Mountain Regional, Park City Water, Summit County regarding implementation of the Summit County project.
Boy, I read that one, and I'm sorry, I can't remember
okay.
at this particular moment what that one is about.
All right, and what did Michelle want to talk about?
Sundance Film Sundance licensing. We're going to be coming to council with some recommendations on how we might do that differently. It's so interesting. Every year, you know, staff gets out in front. We talk to people who are typically go ahead and get temporary business licenses. We do everything we can, and then it's just at the 11th hour, people are coming in and asking for business licenses, you know, 2 days before the festival.
So how are we going to change it, Michelle?
So what staff is going to be looking at for the discussion is a better understanding of what the expectations are as far as the level of service to this high demand during the month of January. And then secondly, it would be to identify how we're going to respond to that expectation, right? Staff has been looking at and collaborating on different ideas on how to address this workload. Some of the conversation is going to be around simplifying some of the fees and the process of the applications, and the other top parts of the conversation are going to be about implement submittal deadlines. Is that something we would like to do to allow staff time for processing, or is it something that we need to dedicate more staff towards?
Yeah. Part of it is just an education process, though, no? Because people here know kind of the rules, but it's the people coming in from out of town that you're
definitely
seeing
and
last
during,
minute.
Correct. And during Sundance, the majority of the applicants are from out of town. Even if the entity has been here before, many a times the person applying and processing the applications hasn't done the process before, or it's been a year. And so they need a little bit more education.
Okay. And real quick, Diane wanted to ask you about whether or not the city representatives, are they going to be part of the discussion today with the county council on accepting hazardous waste at the 3 Mile landfill?
Liza Simpson and I will be going there to that discussion. And council member Liza Simpson is the environmental liaison. Additionally, the mayor may attend as well. Not he just got back into town, so I haven't talked to him about his schedule. I can also tell you that the Mountain Regional Agreement that you're talking about, it has to do with shared infrastructure that we have with that group.
Okay. Back, though, just to the discussion today at the county council. I mean, what's the city asking to do at the landfill?
The city very much has an interest in we have what's called in the community Bevel-exempt waste, and that was created. That's a law that exists that says that mining waste can be taken to a Class 1 landfill, which is what the county has as a landfill. And what the city is specifically asking is, can residents and the municipal government haul there? Because we used to haul to Richardson Flats at $225 a cubic yard. It now costs, it can be between $150 and $185 a cubic yard to haul to Tooele. And that's not affordable for residents. So the city is specifically asking if, as residents of Park City are also residents of Summit County. So can residents take it there and pay the $30 tipping fee, which is significantly better than having to haul to Tooele?
Sure, but we've got an unlined landfill there, don't we, right above the headwaters of Rockport Reservoir?
The city actually, in 2010, actually, the county allowed city materials to go there. So it's because it's allowed in there. And also the one of the things I think is quite interesting is that they use utilite as a cover material, and utilite is Rockport is regulated for phosphorus, and utilite has a lot of phosphorus in it. There's potential that the stuff that's in the Bevel exempt waste will actually bind with the utilite and prevent it from running off into Rockport. So it actually could be an improvement to the landfill. That being said, the city's specific request is going to be that we get to go into a second cell, which is the county's planning on building. They already have the hole for it. They already own the land. And that is planned to be a lined cell. And the city's also willing to participate in paying for that.
Sounds like we want a little repository here.
The city owns land in Lower Silver Creek, and the EPA had been working with the city and actually asked the city to do evaluation on the Pace property that the city owns, and so we were looking at that. I think it's more money, and I don't think that the county actually wants it located there, so we think this is a win-win solution.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:45. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio with me from the Summit County Health Department, I have Director Rich Bulla along with Spokeswoman Katie Mullally. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Wanted to give an update with regard to the pooches on porches here. So how's that going?
It's actually going really well. Thanks for letting us talk about it. I did want to clear up kind of a common misconception out there. I was actually at a restaurant recently, and I got in a conversation with several people who saw a sign hanging on the patio asking me why we have banned dogs. So I wanted to clarify that in fact, the dogs are banned by state food code. And Summit County Health Department has put in place a variance for that. And we're actually pretty thrilled about it, and we think we're being really progressive. But I wanted to be sure that people understood that it is not us that is banning the dogs. We, in fact, are by state law required to enforce a dog ban that is state food code. But we're excited that there's ways to work around that, especially in the case of common patios. So, places like Silver Star and Redstone, those different places where it makes sense because the trails drain onto those areas. And it's important that we try to accommodate what the community's desiring.
All right. So, again, restaurants can apply for a $300 permit, I think it is.
That's correct. And we actually have 8 applications right now. We have 5 restaurants that have already been approved. We're doing inspections. We anticipate, kind of our rough guess was there'd be about 12. And we think probably by fall that's about where we'll be, is about 12 restaurants.
All right. So if your pooch isn't allowed, it's really you need to talk to the business owner.
That's correct. And importantly, Katie, and I'll turn it over to her in a second, she's been working on education materials. Kind of the etiquette is that the owner needs to be in control of the dog, and we want to be sure that people understand it's not the restaurant that is responsible for that, it's the owner. So part of it's an education process, but ultimately restaurants that want to cater specifically to clients who want dogs, they have the right to come in and get an application.
We've actually had a few restaurants ask us for materials or information to post on their properties, educating dog owners about what their responsibilities are, such as keeping dogs on leash, do not let the dog sit on the couches or the furniture, you know, only water on the patios. If your dog is being disruptive, you need to remove it. And it seems like some of the dog owners have shown up in these restaurants that have been permitted and just, okay, you let their dogs wander around, no control over the dogs. And the restaurants wanted us to help them enforce these rules so they can keep control and keep their permitting going. So they're going to be there. We're creating signs, information for all the restaurants to post and hand out to their clients. But just remember, as a dog owner, you have a responsibility to be a partner in this so that your pooch can be on the patio.
Okay. Hey, Rich, right back to you here. I wanted to ask you, of course, a while ago we had the boil water order from Oakley. Tell me, I mean, how is it that water gets contaminated like that? I mean, it's a sealed system, right?
Well, in theory, yes. But yeah, there has to be some sort of a violation of that seal. And in the case of Oakley, there was some construction that went on out there. And we understand that there was a line that was ruptured and repaired. That may, we're not certain, but that may have been part of the cause. And also the source box, so in essence, the box protecting the well, had some gravel in it, and there was a small area where it had been worn, and there had been some gravel that had gotten into that source, so it could have been either of those.
All right. But the bacteria we're talking about is something that you would find, like, from a sewer line.
Perhaps. It can also come from animals. You know, obviously humans are animals. So, it, you know, it depends. If there's any livestock anywhere nearby and there's construction that's being done and the water line gets ruptured, then you potentially have a problem.
So by going in, and I mean, you just basically flushed it with chlorine, huh?
Correct. Yeah, and I do want to give kudos to the water company in Oakley. They were really on top of this, and it was a great example of a partnership between the county and, in fact, with Park City as well. We heard really quickly from Michelle DeHaan and her staff asking what support they could provide. That was really great, and it was an example, I think, of not just working to get communication out, but also working to find a solution. And it's probably the best. You don't want to have boil orders all the time, but in some respects, it's good to practice those relationships. And this was an example where things worked really well.
Yeah. So were things waters tested? How often? I'm just thinking. I mean, is it every week? Because then we've got, you know, 6 days of people drinking contaminated
water. Yeah, we do a standard series of tests, and then the water companies are responsible for testing as well. So it's very frequent. And oftentimes, especially if you've got a suspicion where there's been rains or where there's been construction, and we've had both in that area, then sometimes the testing will be more frequent.
Okay. Also wanted to ask you a little bit about the school radon testing that was done. I mean, people, homeowners are encouraged to test their property for radon, but now we're doing it in our schools?
Yes. The Board of Health, Summit County Board of Health, was really surprised, as was I, to learn that with the exception of Park City High School, we were not testing for radon in the schools. And to me, that just seems illogical. And we are implementing a process where we're doing basically safety inspections in all the schools in Summit County. And those include facilities inspections. And it seemed a good time to implement radon testing as well. We've worked with the superintendents of the schools, and they're completely on board. All three school districts, the superintendents have been awesome. Very proactive, very engaged, supporting the partnership. And so we're actually excited about it. There hasn't been any hesitation at all from any of the schools to do the testing.
Yeah, until they see if, in case they have to mitigate it, then we're talking a lot of money, huh?
Well, not as much as you'd think. Mitigation actually has to do just with ventilation. You don't go in and pull a bunch of soils out and do all that stuff. You can put up barriers to prevent the gases from leaking in. It's actually a breakdown. It's a byproduct of uranium. So you can also just vent. You put in basically external vents that keep the air moving. And it's not, you know, in a home, it's less than $2,000. In a school, obviously more than that, but it's not, it isn't prohibitive.
Yeah, and what I do remember, it's like the second cause of lung cancer besides smoking.
That's correct. It is the first cause among non-smokers.
Yeah. Yep. Dangerous stuff.
Yep.
Okay. Hey, Rich, Katie, anything else?
Perfect.
Nope, that's it.
Leslie, all right.
Thank you.
Hey, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks a lot.
KPCW News Time now, 8:53. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now in the studio, I have the director of the production The Foreigner, opening at the Egyptian Theater on Thursday, Clarence Gilliard. Good morning, and thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about The Foreigner. It's a comedy.
Yeah, Larry Hsu wrote this Obie Award-winning comedy about racism in the South. Actually, an Englishman and his friend come to a Georgia resort, fishing resort, and one of the gentlemen is experiencing a hard separation from his wife who has cancer and she's in the hospital. So he takes 3 days to detoxify in Georgia, of all places. But he's so anxious and neurotic that he can't deal with human beings. So the two men engineer it so that the people in the resort think that he doesn't understand English.
Wow.
And so people say and do things around him, right?
That they otherwise wouldn't, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right.
Yeah. All right. So you've got a cast of how many?
We've got seven. And it's a good year for me to be with these young actors from Cedar City and actually all over Utah. And they're very funny and they're very talented.
Yeah, this
and
is
this
like,
is our 13th season, so the Neil Simon Festival is just growing leaps and bounds, and so people are attracted to the festival and the talent, and I get to get my directing bone satisfied, as it were.
Yeah, so even though it's like part of the Neil Simon production, we do
right.
other
Well, this is our third season coming to the Egyptian, and it's worked out really well. Saturday sold out, so get ready, and I think Friday's not so good for people. Thursday we open and then we close on Sunday, so if you want to see it, and you should see it. It's a very, very funny farce. You know, a lot of innuendo and double entendre and that kind of thing, and mature but funny and crazy romp.
Yeah. So they've been doing the production across the state and
what, No. We opened the season. We literally opened the season this year. We opened the season last year, I think. Yeah, we opened the season last year here, and then we'll be in Cedar City for 2 months, and then we'll come back and finish the season. And so the festival is expanding. We plan to be, I think, in Colorado the next couple of years. So he's done a good thing. Richard Bug, who is the artistic director and the founder of the festival, he's really done a great thing for Utah and Utahns. Is that how you say it? Utahns,
yeah, just an N on there.
Yeah.
So you actually act with the troupe then as well?
I do. Richard and I met when I was up here something like 15 years ago. We came – Walker, Texas Ranger, the show that I used to be on. We came up here for 2 months. And I met Richard, who was on faculty at Southern Utah. And we became friends. And I've always been attracted as a young person to university community because my father went to school when I was growing up in our house. And so I – understand the importance of higher education. So when Richard told me that he was an actor and he was an academic, that was the meeting place for us, spiritually as it were. And so we've become friends for this whole time. And so when I came on faculty at UNLV, he was just a hop, skip, and a jump north. And so
great.
He invited me to the festival.
All right. So The Foreigner, again, it's going to be on stage at the Egyptian Theater. Opens Thursday night, runs through Sunday night. People can get more information at parkcityshows.com. Thank you for coming by, Clarence.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:57, and in the studio with me now from United Team United Park City, I've got the director, Ryan Walsh. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So you've got what going on?
I'm here for the Youth Sports Alliance.
Okay.
I'm supporting them today. There's a golf tournament coming up next Friday, and it is the first golf tournament that will be held at the New Canyons Golf Course. And it's a fundraiser, and spots remain available, but the it's closing out quickly. I think there's a few spots left and a couple opportunities to sponsor a hole or the beverage cart or something like that. And so YSA is looking to close that all out in time for the June 19th event.
Okay. How do people register?
We can go to ysaparkcity.org, and there's the main image on the initial site is refers to the golf event, so you can find it there.
Okay. Again, it all goes to support the Alliance.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. In the meantime, what have you guys got going on this summer?
Oh, man, we have tons of things going on. So the 19th is the golf tournament. That's first. On Father's Day, we're doing Fathers Fly Free at UOP for the parents of kids who have been in full or part-time programs for our organization. And I'd say go to our website. I'll have a blog post up about that in probably an hour. Can I have an hour to
you
do that? And then we're going to do a 4th of July parade with YSA. We will have Team Park City United will be at the Wednesday night Deer Valley concert on the 24th when Changing Lanes is playing at Deer Valley. And Amy wanted me to remind or let everyone know that October 24th is the date for Jan's Winter Welcome this year.
Okay. You get got athletes are doing some dry land training in the meantime?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. We have the gym is in full swing. We have kids who are coming and going to camps in places like Aspen. We're gearing up for South America. And we have the water ramps starting on Monday, fingers crossed.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Grand opening here.
Oh, the 27th. The 27th is a grand opening at UOP. I'm sure you've talked about it with other folks.
Okay. Hey, Ryan, thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much.
It's Ryan Walsh, Executive Director of Team Park City United.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.